You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Fabulous Peltoncast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And before we get to today's special guest, a quick reminder that we are just days away from Fabulous Peltoncast Live this Friday at Belltown Yacht Club.
It's game week.
Should we be doing more preparation?
No, we're good.
We've already prepared
so much. The separation, if you didn't know, is in the preparation, and that's why we've been doing a lot of preparation for Peltoncast Live this Friday at Belltown Yacht Club. You know what to expect from Peltoncast Live. You should, A, come hungry.
Yes.
There will be food from... I'm just going to say it because there are sponsors and there are friends. There might be Poliachi Pizza in the house.
That seems reasonable.
Potentially others.
Yeah.
Which you'd never guess what it was. But we'll have surprises in store. We'll also have Ben Baldwin joining us to talk about the 2019 Seahawks season. As you're going to hear coming up with our special guest, Mina Kimes, we're going to have DJ Infrared and Josh Sainer on Talkin' Taco Time. We're going to have the decider, Zach Whitman, help us decide what is Seattle's best sandwich. Plus, beyond that, plenty of other surprises and Rainier Tallboys.
Did you confirm it yet?
No.
Okay, we'll try to do that before the show. That Mr. Separation is in the preparation.
nothing's going to change.
Tickets.
I'm not a beer distributor. Oh. I'm many things, but I am not a beer distributor.
Not yet. $10 tickets for this show. You can get them either at soniccentral.com/peltoncast or at peltoncast on Twitter. So we hope to see as many of you out there as possible.
There are also less than 10 tickets left. There probably will not be tickets available at the door. So go ahead and grab those now while you still can.
And then stay tuned after Mina. We're going to go through our 2019 NFL over-unders in an annual Peltoncast tradition. And now, let's get to Mina. Our special guest today is a member of the Peltoncast Legion of Boom, the co-host of her own podcast, The Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny, a regular on Around the Horn and Highly Questionable with Dan Le Batard, and most recently, a color analyst for the LA Rams preseason broadcasts. Thanks for joining us again, Mina.
Thank you, Kevin. As I said earlier, I felt like I needed this to regain my status on Seahawks Twitter, which, as you guys know, it's been under attack lately, not only from fellow Twitter members, but also from the quarterback of the Seattle Seahawks. So it's going to take a lot, but I hope this is the first step in rebuilding our relationship.
It's not quite all the way to the top of the organization because Pete Carroll hasn't tweeted about it yet, but it came pretty close, that's for sure.
That's true. Well, I hope that I gave them a play involving Puna Ford, and I if they actually take me up on that, I'm going to take a lot of credit for it, and I hope to get some, some kudos.
It looked more likely when the Seahawks briefly did not have a fullback on the roster. Sadly, they're back to having a fullback.
I know. Nick Ballore, right? Yeah. You knew that was going to come.
How did it feel for you, Mina, having Russell Wilson dunk on you on Twitter?
Dunk is a really strong word, Tristan.
This is, it's judging by Russell Wilson standards.
It was a little surreal, I'll say. I thought it was Cable Thanos, but he informs me that the emoji are a giveaway, that it's Russell Wilson tweeting. And no, like I said, the healing has to begin. And, I hope my enthusiasm about the Jadeveon Clowney trade, which I'm sure we'll talk about, conveyed where my heart is and where it's always been.
Okay, so we don't have to worry that you're a double agent with this Puna Ford play?
No, I listen, when are the Seahawks and the Rams playing?
We should probably know that, but I don't know off the top of my head.
A little earlier than last year, I think. Maybe I'm wrong. In any case, I'm sure people will mercilessly roast me, but I intend to prove my allegiances then.
Okay, good.
I mean, I was wondering whether there was going to be like any divided loyalties when that game happens.
No, the only thing I think that I do deserve some criticism for is because of this gig, I didn't pay as much attention to the Seahawks preseason as I usually do. So, I'm not like as well versed in the many talents of Jazz Ferguson as you guys.
R.I.P.
But, That said, I look forward to learning about it from you.
Well, good news. The entire preseason happened over this last weekend. So not much happened before then. So, all right, let's get to talking about Jadeveon. Mina, when you first heard rumors that this was coming down, what were your thoughts?
Well, you know, my thought was, I guess, a little bit of trepidation at first, because I didn't want him for Seattle or think that the pass rush was sorely lacking, but because I assumed it would take a hell of a lot more to give up for him. And I think, I guess I didn't put it all together in terms of the leverage he had, having not signed the tender, right? You saw some of the rumors coming out of Miami of what they were willing to give up. And when I saw, oh, right, Jadeveon's not going there, so they can't, I think that was when it really hit me, hey, this might actually work out in Seattle's favor.
It's kind of fascinating. There was a lot of talk over the summer, like the Kawhi Leonard trade, and everyone talked about how he played it perfectly because of the fact that he got him and Paul George with the Clippers. And it's like, yeah, but that did take Ivy up like 5 first-round picks and 2 swaps in the future. Clowney actually like did what people kind of credited Kawhi for there in terms of he got himself to the destination he wanted while also making sure that that team would be as good as possible.
Yeah, and I think it's a fascinating case study for a number of reasons because, you know, people keep asking me, well, does this mean now players in the NFL are going to, you know, there's going to be out of player empowerment like the NBA? And no, because the NFL is so different. Like, this was really a perfect storm of a lot of issues, right? It was Houston not making certain moves earlier when they had the opportunity. It is Jadeveon Clowney, a 26-year-old star, being willing to go toe-to-toe and saying, I think the way Le'Veon Bell did, yeah, maybe I won't play this season. You have to be willing to walk the walk, which is why it's so rare in football.
And also, I think the fact that Houston has effectively a head coach as GM, someone who's kind of making these decisions for the first time, I think that also clearly, if you look in the context of the trade they later made with Miami, seemed to come into play.
Yeah, that one, I think it's definitely much more like the win now desperation type move. The Clowney one's interesting, though, because, you know, I mentioned making moves earlier, but even earlier, there still could have been, I think, he still could have exerted the same power over it, saying, well, I'm not going to sign my tender. But I think you might have had more teams in the arena, like, willing to offer a long-term extension, which he wanted, right? I think the problem was because this dragged on so long, the number of teams involved, it was winnowed a lot, and especially because teams maybe weren't as willing to give him that kind of extension as well.
I want to talk about like the process on Saturday morning. Were you refreshing Twitter constantly trying to figure out what the actual parameters of this trade were like the rest of us?
Yes. I had a great day planned for Labor Day weekend. I was going to take my dog out for a really long walk, maybe run some errands, like treat myself to a nice brunch. And instead, I think I spent 4 consecutive hours just refreshing Twitter, waiting for the details to come out. And really just like, you know, sending a lot of texts to Danny, Kelly, and friends that it's a good thing those are texts and not on the internet.
Do you have like a traders group text?
Yes, it's a trader. I think the name of that group text it's changed a lot. It's now Russell MVP season, but it's changed a few times. But yeah, I think just the enthusiasm, it felt with this trade like every additional detail that came out was better than the last, right? Because when you first saw the trade, I was like, okay, they're probably going to give up, I don't know, like a Fetty and a second. And then my friend Aaron Race, who covers the Texans, tweeted, actually, it's a couple linebackers. I was like, oh, okay, cool. That's a position Seattle's deep in. So maybe Kendricks. And they just kept getting better and better. it was a wonderful day.
It was like, so you know the Vince McMahon meme of him like being excited and then jumping up with excitement. And then he falls over in the chair. So it's like Seahawks trade for Jadeveon Clowney for a 3rd-round pick plus 2 players. Then we find out who the 2 players are. Then it kept on giving the next morning with the tweet from Adam Schefter that they were paying almost half of his salary for this season. And that was the moment for already. I think there was a Bill Barnwell story where he called it a heist. And that was without even knowing this detail.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. you know, the only, I guess, potentially, I don't even know if it's that bad, cold water you could throw on it is the news. You know, the CX said they wouldn't franchise him, which is interesting. And I think I was trying to think of the last time I'd seen that in a trade like this, a team agreeing, you know, almost throwing in a no franchise clause without doing it. I don't know if it was written down on paper, but I personally, I guess if they had the opportunity to franchise him, then they could use leverage him, like not only leverage that if they wanted to do a long-term contract, but also, you know, use it to trade him potentially. But I don't think it's a huge deal given the amount of, given the fact they'd probably get a third round comp if he walks. And this is a team that I don't anticipate being super active in free agency.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it limits your options a little bit, your flexibility. And obviously they did use that franchise tag with Frank Clark, but also the fact that, you know, it'd be more expensive as a second consecutive franchise tag would have made it a little bit less valuable in this case in terms of the leverage for a long-term deal or a trade.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And look, like the short-term impact of this is extraordinary. I don't know if you guys saw, he was at practice today, which, that's my analysis of that. And, you know, there were some quotes from him about like how he's going to be used as a 4-3 end. And I think there were some questions about what that might look like. And I just read this, but like thinking about him in that kind of Michael Bennett role, moving him inside, you know, after watching highlights over the last few days, seeing how disruptive he is when used on the inside like that is really exciting.
I mean, that seems like the closest comp here in terms of, we talked about this on the emergency podcast we did on Saturday, you know, what he does as a run defender, the way that he tries to time his get off, and then the fact that he tends to be more productive in terms of pressures, in terms of sacks, that Bennett seems like the best single comparison for him.
Yeah, I mean, he is an elite run defender, right? And just thinking about what the front seven is going to look like in the back half of the season when Reed returns, it is pretty absurd. And heaven knows they need it because the secondary is obviously full of question marks.
Yep. I mean, so the other exciting news from practice today, we saw that first off that both Clowning and then Ziggy Ansah on the other side of the defensive line were both practicing.
And LJ Collier coming back recently.
Yeah.
And DK Metcalf.
That's what I was getting to. The DK Metcalf looking healthy. Like, my optimism level about this season is so much higher than it was 3 days ago. Are you feeling the same way?
I am, and it's a little ridiculous. Because I think before the Clowney trade, like a couple weeks ago, if you'd asked me, I saw the Seattle as like maybe a borderline wild card team. Now I think of them as like, I think wild card's the floor, or it should be, right? Even though they do have a very difficult schedule.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's always the chance of injury and that sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, now they can, knock on wood. Now that I think that they can much more reasonably aspire to compete in the NFC West.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, like, look, I am no Rams fan, but the team is a lot deeper. Okay. And I think any sane, reasonable person would acknowledge that. But I do think if the Rams have a weakness that perhaps I may have ascertained in my time there, there's a couple of things that strike me. One would be, and obviously the Rams are the team that Seattle would be competing with there to win the division. The outside pass rush is still a question mark. They are very excited about Dante Fowler, and you know it was sort of non-existent last year. And then on the other side of the ball, they've got two new offensive linemen starting on the inside who actually didn't even play in the preseason because they were so confident in them, and also McVay just doesn't play anyone in the preseason. So that's what I'll be watching with the Seahawks in mind, and I think they're playing after Reed returns. I forgot. Do we find the exact week?
It's week 5, so.
Oh, never mind. Okay, they're not.
That's the matchup in Seattle. They play in LA in week 14.
Yeah, if there's one area that Clowney could play a massive difference in, I think it would be against that Rams offensive line on the inside.
That sounds great. it was like going throughout this preseason, I think we feel fairly confident about the offense in general, which we can talk about more later. But I mean,
there's certainly some questions about the receiver core.
Well, you know, we can talk about that a little bit. But a Russell Wilson-led offense, you're not going to go into the season saying they're bad.
Right.
this defense, without potentially many players being injured who we didn't know would necessarily be back by week one, you know, you're looking at it and you're like, without Jaren Reed, Ons is a question mark, LJ Collier's a question mark. At that point, we're looking at it like, who's going to rush the passer on this team? And then all of a sudden, in one weekend, everything kind of flips where that was a weakness. And then all of a sudden, it looks like a position group of strength where they're releasing Cassius Marsh, a veteran defensive lineman who we thought maybe they'd be relying on in week one.
I mean, he was their leading returning sacker before this weekend.
He's on Arizona now, right?
Yep.
Has he played on, you know, he's not been on the Rams. So to get like the NFC West EGOT, he needs to get picked up by the Rams. But yeah, it look, if your secondary looks like what Seattle's does at the moment, which is just, it's very uncertain outside of, honestly, Bradley McDougal, right? Their only solution for that is a very vibrant pass rush, you know, and I was not optimistic at all about this defense. I probably, it's a little bit ridiculous, the notion that one player can make you go from thinking a defense is bad to good. And I don't think that. I thought it was bad before, and now I think they have, their baseline is average, with the potential to be, once Reed is back, good. But man, does Clowney make it a lot easier.
Some of the tweets are hard to get past. Seeing Zach Whitman tweet, when was the last time that the Seahawks picked up two undervalued defensive linemen over the offseason? And if you squint hard enough, you're like, man, Ziggy Ansah coming from the Lions, definitely undervalued in his most recent season. Jadeveon Clowney, great run-stopping and also pass-rushing defensive lineman, kind of ready for, I mean, Jadeveon Clowney has already had his breakout, but ready for a monster season. And it's like, okay.
Yeah, and all these guys help each other, right? Like, I think I saw somewhere that Clowney got doubled more than Watt last year. It's going to be interesting to see how that affects their defense. And look, if there's anything that's going to ease Ziggy Ansah's path back, it's the presence of Jadeveon Clowney.
Okay, so what about the receiving core? over the weekend, the Seahawks released Jerron Brown. And a couple of moves that they made by showing good faith to players, letting them know that they were going to be bringing them back. I guess three of them,
yeah,
between
three.
Nick Ballore, Jerron Brown, and then Geno Smith. And it's part of that which lets them say to Jadeveon Clowney, we're not going to franchise you, because Pete Carroll is a man of his word. But in that moment, without Jerron Brown, it was looking like an extremely inexperienced receiving core. Now with him back, I don't know if that changes things that much. Mina, are we ready to witness the firepower of this fully armed and operational battle station?
So I think one of the things that makes me sad about missing the preseason is apparently I missed the rise of John Ursua.
Right.
The new Doug Baldwin. But that is a role I think that I'm most curious about, right? Because if you think about Lockett and Brown and potentially Metcalf and all of their skill sets, I think what Ursua potentially brings to the table is what's missing as that sort of underneath threat. So I think that I'm very curious to see how all of those guys fit together. I'm also very curious to see how defenses handle Tyler Lockett if he gets doubled a lot, and sort of what that opens up for the rest of the core.
It feels like the organization is much higher on Malik Turner than anyone on the outside of the organization is, because all the talk during preseason on Seahawks Twitter was about Ursua's baby Doug, Jazz Ferguson size, obviously the continued DK Metcalf hype, even though he didn't necessarily do a lot before suffering an injury during the preseason. And, you know, even beyond that, it was guys like Terry Wright made some big plays in the preseason. Keenan Reynolds, who had been on the roster last year. I don't think anyone ever mentioned Malik Turner. And then he just, like, was high up in the rotation and comfortably made the roster. So that's another fascinating one to me, how much they really value him.
Yeah, is he good on special teams? Is there any whispers about that? First of all, is Tyler Lockett returning punts and kicks? Because that, I do not like that. If that's true,
I don't feel like we have a strong feel for that. Ugo Amadi did a bunch of it during the preseason.
Love him.
So I think he's a strong candidate to do that. Obviously, McKissick did a fair bit, and he's not going to be in the mix now, nor is Keenan Reynolds, who did it at times. So, yeah, I think it's probably between Amadi and Lockett is the most likely candidates, unless I'm missing someone now.
Let's not with Tyler Lockett. I will say this about Malik and kind of the preseason in general. If there's one thing I learned from being on the Rams broadcast team, so they had a wide receiver named Mike Thomas who...
Wait, was this the one who played at Southern Miss?
On the Jaguars, was he?
Did. There's so many Mike Thomases. A lot of Mike Williamses. And he didn't do a ton in the preseason, but when I went to camp and watched joint practices and talked with the coaches, it was unbelievably obvious to me that he would make the team. And I think sometimes, especially with the way preseasons are trending, we're kind of getting a misleading picture of especially skill players and what they're capable of and how they're regarded internally. And that was something I didn't really understand, I think, until I was a little bit more embedded with the team.
Yeah, I mean, this is something I thought about a lot covering preseasons with the Sonics and Storm organizations is, you know, the ratio isn't quite as high in basketball, but, you know, in football, you have four preseason games, and that's generally all the public sees. You have like 40 practices. The ratio is like 10 to 1 practices in terms of games. And I don't think they probably count equally in terms of weight in the coaches' minds, but they also don't count like zero to the practices like they do in the minds of fans.
Yeah, I think that's fair. By the way, I just saw a video of Pete Carroll's presser, and this is the happiest he's looked in like 6 years. So we're going to the Super Bowl.
So the other thing that you missed while not paying attention to the Seahawks preseason was he was right in front of us all along, but we didn't even notice, and that was the rise of CJ Procise.
Oh, boy.
You're not getting your hopes up?
No, that's another game. I missed the last two games, so this is all new. This has all been. I watched the highlights. We know how talented he is. We've seen it, right? It's funny because I know with Ben Baldwin, there's been a lot of anti-running back pass sentiment going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
My feeling about that is. Well, it's like, okay, are the RB passes replacing passes to wide receivers, or are they placing runs, right? And also, I think situationally, sometimes they can be effective. But I'm very curious to see early on how he's deployed, and if he's deployed heavily, and if he takes snaps away from Penny.
Yeah, I think that's going to be interesting. If he gets in the mix as a third down back at all, just... There was some question of whether they would use him at wide receiver when they were down to it looked like potentially four healthy players at that spot. Now seems unlikely since with Brown's return, they have seven guys there and only David Moore out long term. I do want to note, by the way, that the Mike Thomas on the Rams had 9 catches for 190 yards and 2 touchdowns against the Huskies in the 2015 Heart of Dallas Bowl.
Oh, man.
And that Southern Miss team, by the way, sneakily loaded. The quarterback was, of course... Nick Mullins.
Yep.
And the running back was Ito Smith of the Falcons.
Wow.
Wow. Nick Mullins won the number 2 job I saw in San Francisco. It's only a matter of time before he takes...
Future starter Nick Mullins.
Yeah, right. It's his destiny.
I dropped him in the 3rd round in fantasy.
Really? I would, but you know, his grandpa still has me blocked, so...
We're going to have to work through that. We're going to have to get you unblocked by him. That's no fair. I mean, I think the tight end group is also a question. They're down to 2 there after waiving Jacob Hollister, placing Ed Dixon on IR for at least the first 8 weeks before he's eligible to come back. That was, you know, the eligibility to come back was why they had to keep him through the initial cutdown to 53 before subsequently waiving him and bringing back. I think that was the Jerron Brown move was the corresponding one. So you've got there Nick Vanette, who just always seems to survive. And then Thrill Dissly coming back from injury, and that's it at that position.
Yeah. I mean, there was a few cuts that surprised me. I don't know. I guess the Kalitra one, maybe.
I was certainly surprised that they kept Shaquem Griffin over him.
Yeah, without IRing him, right?
He was back in practice today, so apparently
might be the outcome again. I guess that would go back to... another thing I learned from my time with this, the Rams preseason, which is, as fans, we tend to underweight special teams, especially at positions where the organization feels like they're deep, which like linebacker would obviously be that for Seattle.
Yeah, Kalitra was probably a lot less likely to play, even, you know, with a Kendricks possibly going to prison and another injury at that position, because now Cody Barton is that next guy up at that linebacker position.
Ben Burke Irvin in there too. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, very fired up about the BBK preseason. Yeah.
It was interesting, though. It didn't feel like this year there was that one like preseason darling who got cut. Jazz Ferguson had week one, but he faded pretty quickly after that.
Yeah, the what's his name? The guy who went to the Browns.
Kaysen,
yeah, never forget. Yeah, right. Or was Pope cut in the preseason, or did he make, I forget.
He was cut in the preseason, yeah, that first year.
Yeah, I think this one was pretty straightforward. No one got too angry about anything. I don't know. I guess, you know, with the Bengals, too, this weekend, it is a fairly soft opening. and no AJ Green, but after that it's gonna get rough. So
yeah, it gets real in a hurry going to Pittsburgh in week two for a 10 a.m start.
Oh my God.
And then the Saints coming to town the week after that.
Yeah, do you guys have any concerns about the Bengals matchup?
Nope.
I mean, I haven't looked real deeply at the Bengals yet, but not a ton.
The line is still good.
Yeah,
so that would be my biggest concern, especially so what's his name? Iupati's still hurt, right? So what's the starting O-line looking like now?
So it'll be Posick in his spot, presumably.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's some depth concerns for sure. I mean, the biggest fear I think any of us had when that trade first went down and there was the two players were said to be part of it was not really Jermaine Ifedi, but the fact that Justin Britt's name got mentioned there.
That doesn't make any sense. So I had just come from Houston, and that is, you know, they've got Nick Martin. They're fine at center. They're playing their two rookie tackles who they took, you know, near the top of the draft in the first and second rounds. They're playing them at guard. Well, which we'll see how that goes. But it was so odd. Like, tackle was so obviously the issue for them. It didn't make any sense for me that they would trade for Britt.
So Mina, you mentioned to look at the offense that your group text is called Russell Wilson MVP season. What do you think are the set of circumstances that have to happen to set up a situation like that this season?
So the offensive line has to maintain at least the same level as play as last year, which I feel good about, you know. Mm-hmm. Second, you know, another year under Solari, that I think I'm optimistic about that. And then I would say there needs a second wide receiver needs to emerge, whether that's Metcalf or Ursua. Russell's not going to need a second option. Kind of know what Jaren Brown is at this point, I feel like. So we'll see about that. And then beyond that, you know, like a slight evolution in the play calling. You know, Russell Wilson is not winning MVP if he hands the ball off 300 times a game. So I thought there was some in the games that I actually watched Russell Wilson's drives this preseason, and I saw some nice stuff. Obviously, you're getting pretty vanilla looks in the preseason, but there was some reason for optimism. And I think we will see pretty early on if, I guess, that Seahawks offense is evolving at all this year.
I think the other element I'd add there probably is the defense not being very good.
Yes.
Because that could force them to throw more often and create some Russell Wilson heroics. Like if you have a whole season of that Houston Texans game from 2 years ago.
I've got some bad news for you then.
Glad he's on this side.
Yes.
Oh man, that game was incredible. But yeah, I completely agree. I think Pete Carroll has so much faith in his defense, and I think that flows down to the offensive play calling, right? And he's really the one who kind of sets the tone on establish the run. That's from Pete Carroll. And everyone gets mad at Schottenheimer, but that's Pete Carroll. And I think if he will be interesting to see with this Clowney edition, if he has doubts about his defense playing at that sort of top tier level, he could loosen the reins a little bit on the offense.
But as great as Pete Carroll's optimism is, the flip side of that is oftentimes he has a tough time recognizing the harsh realities when a team isn't as good as he thinks.
I know. He's such a, optimist. And sometimes, yeah, It is interesting with the defense too, guys, because going into this season, I was very curious to see if Pete Carroll's scheme would evolve at all. You know, Kevin, you were at the live show I did with KJ Wright, and he was hinting at some schematic changes, mostly to try to generate a pass rush out of nothing. But he also talked about, you know, where it's not that cover three anymore. So I'm curious to see, as defenses around the NFL move away from that, what Pete Carroll does as well.
Yeah, and maybe that's something that they haven't shown us much of in the preseason, wanting to save that for the regular season.
Like
they
maybe do something different. Bit more blitzing happening during.
Oh,
the
definitely, yeah, definitely more blitzing. That for sure.
Yeah, I think every sack was like a linebacker or something, right? Or I don't know. I saw something somewhere. It was all ginned up by Carroll. But yeah, I think the preseason, most defensive coordinators this year didn't really play their hands.
One thing we didn't really get any news about today, that I saw at least, you know, there was so much else exciting news that happened. What the Seahawks plan for Perry Nickerson, the cornerback that they traded for on Saturday as well, who figures to project in the mix as a nickel corner option, where they didn't get great play from Akeem King during the preseason.
Yeah, I mean, with a name like that, how can you play any other position? He's our Nickel Roby Coleman.
I'm glad I'm not the only one who made that connection.
sad. So right now it projects as Flowers and Griffin, potentially Nickerson, right? And then Thompson and McDougal.
Yep.
If outside of McDougal, one of those guys takes a step forward this season, I think that they should be good enough.
Who do we feel like has the better chance of that between Flowers and Griffin?
It's tough. They've both been inconsistent and I think flashed different skill sets. Griffin in particular is kind of disappointing just because of the regression aspect.
Right.
But it also means he's capable, I think, of playing at an elevated level.
Yeah, I mean, you know, development is not always linear, and the challenge that he was tasked with became a lot more difficult last year, moving from the right side of the field to the left and, you know, effectively becoming the number one corner.
I think that's something people always underestimate with even like Marcus Peters last year. Oh, you look at me, always making it about the Rams.
We heard that as a Husky reference. It's okay.
Yeah, okay. Sort of, right? But, you know, he's considered an elite cornerback, and when Tlaib went out, he was completely incapable of covering number one guys and playing man, and they had to change the scheme and recognize that. And once they switched more to zone, which also coincided with Tlaib coming back, he was able to return to his old self. I think the position is so scheme dependent, and different players' talents at cornerback work in different ways that it's incumbent upon the coaches to get the best out of him.
Yeah. I'd say there's probably also like a sample size issue, because you're really talking about, you know, it's what, 10 passes a game that any cornerback is going to see at most, as opposed to like a defensive lineman has, you know, 50 plays to make some sort of an impact.
Yeah, I mean, we really only notice cornerbacks when they F up, too.
Well, yeah. And defensive linemen when they do something good.
Yep.
Exactly, yeah. it's funny. There are, like, certain positions in the NFL that are – I actually think that I – you know, that's why those positions have different personalities, right? That's why cornerbacks have to be so mentally tough, because people only – or, you know, arrogant, because people only notice you when you make mistakes and you have to bounce back.
I guess one quick Husky question, because you did mention the Rams, but also wanted to hear our former friend from here in Seattle, Taylor Rapp, drafted.
And Greg Gaines.
Oh, and Greg Gaines. You've got a lot of Huskies down there in the Ramley.
But only one of them is in the Asian American athlete shrine at the High Noon Studios. So Rapp is probably the main focus.
Yeah, I assume. How did, I guess, Rapp first, but then also Greg Gaines, how did they look through camp and the preseason?
Awesome, regrettably, for Seattle fans. I thought they both played really, really well this preseason. Gaines ended up getting more snaps because Rapp cemented himself as a starter so early that McVay barely played him in week three and didn't play him at all in week four. You know, he's going to be used situationally there. Now, the Rams, like most defenses, the defense spends most of its time in sub packages anyway, so he'll get on the field a lot. But he really, it was interesting, guys, to watch him from the very first practice I saw him at to his final appearances in the preseason, because he was able to just kind of pick it up so quickly, and he gets to learn next to Eric Weddle, which is a tremendous boon, but he's really already thriving there.
Great, great. Thank you. Yeah. Well, so for the Seahawks, I mean, having taken Marquise Blair like 15 picks before Taylor Rapp, it's just like Marquise Blair better pan out, because you could have easily taken Taylor Rapp with this pick, and especially to have him go to another NFC West team after Buda Baker was drafted by another NFC West team and was a Pro Bowler a couple of years before then. It's just like, come on.
You forgot Byron Murphy?
Well, Byron Murphy went in the first round at least.
I know.
It's so annoying. No, I didn't even think about it that way, but you're right. Marquise Blair, by the way, I saw he was at practice today. So that, I mean, like, what do you think the best case scenario for him this year is? It's people have kind of like forgotten how high, as you just pointed out, how high he was drafted.
I would not be surprised if Marquise Blair started a game.
Well, yeah. Certainly. I mean, with injuries, you'd think there's a chance he starts the game. Whether he cracks the lineup, I mean, part of it is that it just seems like Tedrick Thompson, for all the jokes and abuse that he's taken, has solidified himself in the minds of the Seahawks as, you know, a clear starter there.
Yeah. I mean, he's fast. I think with Blair and McDougal, you know, you definitely have to change the defense. You lose some of that speed. But, like that, and this again, like, this is why we're talking about the personnel. This is why that Seattle pass defense has to evolve. They cannot play the way they played with Earl Thomas, and I'm very curious to see. Pete Carroll, like, is one of, if not the best secondary coaches in NFL history. Let's see if he makes adjustments.
Yeah. So do you have a record prediction for the 2019 Seahawks season?
I'll go 9-7.
I feel like I'm a little bit more positive than that.
That's the clowny thing, I know. I got to look at the schedule again. It is making me more optimistic. You know what? All right, screw it. I'll go 10-6.
There we go.
You talked her into it.
Yeah, we're well 10-6.
Push me in.
It was a 9-7 before the clowny trade, and it's a 10-6 after the clowny trade.
Yeah, I was at 8-8. Now, I don't know. If
I was also at 8-8. Yes,
but. Certainly helps.
If nothing else, as we said at the start of this pod, it's just made us so much more excited to get this season going in 6 days from when we record this.
I think in general, you look at last season, they had a pretty good season, but also didn't have a lot of depth at many positions last year. So they were relying on players not getting injured. They were relying on some luck throughout these games. They're relying on Russell Wilson being extremely efficient and being one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. And now you can look at it and say, you know, not all of them have been great when they've started, but the offensive line is pretty deep at this point. You know, you have Fant as the sixth lineman. You have Posick as a backup once Mike Iupati comes back. You have Joey Hunt, who's played, Jamarco Jones. Like, there's players who have played games in the NFL as backups on this offensive line. You have a deep linebacking core. You have defensive linemen now who are proven star defensive linemen. There are obviously some question marks at a few positions.
Wide receiver again.
But I just really think Russell Wilson, with an average group of receivers, can make that group of receivers look like a good group of receivers. He's going to throw it to who's open.
Yeah, for me, honestly, and maybe this is just kind of my attitude towards football right now. Like, I would rather have a shallow group of receivers than a shallow group of offensive or defensive linemen. Yes. So I'll take it.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that really gives me pause about this defense is the secondary, which may be the most important unit aside from quarterback of any unit in the NFL. So we'll see how that plays out, because that's the one where there is some depth, but you don't necessarily have the star power. We don't even know that anybody is, like, necessarily that great aside from Bradley McDougal.
He's the only one you'd say is even an average starter, yes, at this point.
And then his backups, they're fairly inexperienced or young. So there's a ways to go for the secondary. But at the same time, I mean, you didn't see the Seahawks putting, you know, a lot of draft capital into cornerbacks this offseason. And maybe they do feel confident in these two corners going forward. And, like, Trey Flowers is somebody who at the end of this year we could look at as one of the better cornerbacks in the NFL.
It's true. Trey Flowers could become one of the better cornerbacks in the NFL. Anything is possible.
It's the optimism of the week before the start of the regular season.
Honestly, when you really think about it, any human being could become
any of us.
Yeah, right. Look, it's unfortunate that they're facing a couple of pretty difficult passing attacks early on. But the schedule gets a lot easier as it goes on, in my opinion. So.
Bring on Dante Moncrief. Vance McDonald. Let's go.
Exactly.
This isn't last year's Steelers. Come on.
Well, first it's going to have to be bring on Tyler Boyd.
Bring on Drew Sample.
Yeah.
Mina, thank you so much for joining us. This is our favorite tradition every year. You're always part of the Peltoncast family, even when you're also part of the Ramley.
You know, I just hope that, listen, to everyone who's listening, it's 5:30 p.m. and Kevin DM'd me today and I said, yes, I would love to talk Seahawks with you guys because that's how loyal I am. So nobody question my fealty to this team ever again, please.
It's all right. Nobody remembers the preseason. That's the good thing. Nobody will remember this come like week three. It's okay.
Yeah, I think come week five when the two teams play, people will remember, but...
It was funny. I heard you on the Sarah Spain podcast. That's what she said. And you were talking about kind of all the love you got from everyone when this news was that you were doing the Rams games was first announced, and obviously well-deserved. But I was thinking, well, there was one segment of the internet that didn't make me feel that way.
Oh, they didn't really get riled up until Dangerous Wilson riled them up. Odd twist of fate. In fact, I think it was that week that I was on Bill Simmons' podcast and I was like talking about how if I was on an African safari with Russ, I would throw myself in front of a cheetah and then betrayal. I don't care. Well, he's still my favorite.
It did all make for some great hashtag content.
Mm-hmm. We'll see.
I guess the feeling isn't mutual from Russ if the cheetah comes after you.
Yeah, I don't think so.
All right. Thanks so much, Mina.
Bye, guys.
All right. It's time for NFL over-unders.
So in the past, we've been joined on this podcast by the likes of Danny Kelly at our first ever live show, Ben Baldwin, and now we're welcomed by nobody. You just get us. Have we lost to those two in the previous 2 years?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So that's why we don't have anybody else.
I feel like I've been competitive. You have really struggled.
This is the year. This is my redemption year in all capacities.
It's an important lesson for you not to bet on these in Vegas.
Well, I do no preparation for this podcast. So you went through, you've got spreadsheets and things. I'm just doing it from the heart.
I heard on some podcasts.
I'm just
preparation.
I'm doing it for my Josh Allen place.
Okay.
Whichever Josh Allen.
In the unlikely event that you don't know how these work, casinos will, sports books will set a line for the season total number of wins. Ties in this case do not count as a half a win, although even though they effectively are that. And you can either choose that the team will go over that total or under. You could theoretically do push, but I didn't find I'm not sure what the value is of a push, so let's just not do
We're
that.
Not doing pushes, yeah.
Okay. Even though there are a shocking number of even numbers, I used the lines from Caesar's Sportsbook for this one. So yeah, we'll go through it for each team. And let's see, last year, or 2017, Danny got 21 correct, I got 19, you got 14.
Wow.
Last year, Ben got 20 correct, I got 18, and you got 13.
Wow.
So really, you should just try flipping a coin.
I feel like I know more about football than you, but you do a lot more preparation than me.
We start with the NFC West rival, Arizona Cardinals, with a line of 5 wins this season.
So the Cardinals, I think, are actually one of the harder teams to project. And I was saying this to you, I think that the NFL is fun when it's more like college, where, you know, college, you have all of these different systems, right? Where you're like Navy, they never pass the ball. Whereas another team's like numerous other teams are like,
you could have just said Washington State
or Wazoo or whatever, like air raid teams that basically never run the ball. They run if they absolutely have to and pass the ball 60 times a game. So you
God
have
bless them.
But also, there's just like these differing systems throughout the league. And I think it's kind of cool how the NFL, especially this year, maybe more so than ever, feels like we're getting kind of different systems throughout the league. And that's why Arizona is so hard to project, because it really is about whether Cliff Kingsbury's offense and them running so many more plays than Arizona was previously is going to translate to the NFL, especially with a rookie quarterback leading them. But I'm still going over on this one.
I am also going over a projection of 6.4 wins from Football Outsiders, which steered us way wrong on the Cardinals last year.
Wow.
I think I definitely took the over on Arizona.
Well, that's the thing. It's like last year they win three games, and if you would have told me, well, they were the worst team in the league last year.
Right.
But the fact that they won three games is like, I don't know how they won those three games. So what, do they have to win three more? Doesn't seem like it's that hard.
Atlanta Falcons, a line of 8.5 wins coming off 7 last year.
Permanent over for the Falcons.
Okay. I went the under on this one.
Really?
Football Outsiders has them projected as the worst defense in the NFL. Now, that it's a group that we've seen a couple years ago when they went to the Super Bowl. I don't know if you heard they lost a big lead to the Patriots.
I remember that.
They did it because of the fact that their defense was like just good enough to support this offense that typically has been very good. And, you know, maybe they can capture lightning in a bottle again, but at this point, I'm taking the under.
Wow. This offense is going to be good for the Falcons again.
I don't dispute that.
I mean, they did need last year 3 wins at the end of the season and consecutively to even get to 7-9.
8.5 is a pretty aggressive line for them.
They're
going
to be
more defensible, in my opinion.
Look, I got less than half of these right last year, and I feel very confident about the Falcons over.
Baltimore Ravens, a line of 8 wins with newcomer Earl Thomas.
So another one where we look at these different styles. I mean, you know, Lamar Jackson saying that he wants to pass the ball more than he did last year. There was also a quote from, I think, their offensive coordinator saying that they were going to get medieval with their offense.
Who's their offensive coordinator? Cam Cameron still?
That doesn't sound right. No, maybe it is. But it'll be interesting to see just how this offense works. I'm going under.
I'm going over on this one. This is, you know, a team that, Greg Roman is their new offensive coordinator this year. A team that, you know, consistently has been in the mix, successful, 8.5 win projection from Football Outsiders. The Buffalo Bills with a line of 7 wins.
I'm going under.
I'm going a slight over on this one. I think, you know, they talked about this on the Bill Simmons podcast that he and Cousin Sal did,
which this bears no resemblance to.
It's very different stylistically. But they pointed out that like one of the Jets or Bills is probably going to rise up and have a good season, especially with Miami in
their division. I think I'm thinking of Jets.
Interesting. I feel better about Buffalo, especially relative to the difference because their line is lower. I think they listed a 6.5 line for Buffalo, which would be even more favorable.
Okay, so you look at these point differentials for the AFC East from last year, which are just incredible to see that these teams won so many games. But the Dolphins, -114, and were 7-9.
They were already tanking. They just didn't know it.
I feel like that has to be a record. The Bills at a -105. The Jets at a -108. Like, these teams all outperformed their projections last year. I feel like you just can't look at...
I mean, maybe Buffalo only outperformed it by one win, but yes.
Maybe the Jets didn't outperform their projection. But these were all very bad teams last year who maybe picked up some wins by beating up on each other or getting lucky in some games. I mean, that Bills -105 is with them also beating the Vikings like 37-3.
True.
That's in there.
Okay. Carolina Panthers, a line of 8 wins.
God, they're such an 8-8 team. I'm going to go over for the Panthers. They were in a fairly good position to begin last season. Things kind of all fell apart right around the game that they played the Seahawks.
No, it actually was Bush before that. That was their third consecutive loss already at that point.
But they should have won that game. I mean, they were
a team
that was probably better than the 7-9. I mean, again, looking at their point differential, -6 was probably about a 7-9 season. But I think they were a better team than they ended up playing on the field last year.
I told you this. You made fun of me watching the All or Nothing series on Amazon Prime about the Panthers. Made me feel much better about them because it just like they were clicking on offense, and then Cam Newton got hurt, and he like could not throw the ball.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was a big problem, as it turned out. So.
And the good news is he's totally healthy this year.
Exactly. I mean, I feel
you're going over on this one also.
I'm a slide over here. Chicago Bears, a line of 9 wins after winning 12 in 2018, because it turns out that Vegas has learned to sniff out these obvious regression to the mean candidates.
And they're an under for me.
Yeah, they, and still haven't perhaps sniffed them out enough.
This is one we discussed last year, that defense is less repeatable year to year, right?
Yes. It's less consistent year to year in terms of like DVOA, much less consistent.
And the Bears were a team that had massive outlier with regards to turnovers, which is something, even with defense being inconsistent year to year, is even more inconsistent year to year.
Yeah. So all of that points to a team that is going to be not nearly as effective as last year. Going to have to rely much more on their offense to win games. Their Football Outsiders projection is for 7.9 wins.
Wow. I mean, that's not still that, like, if they were at their projection, it would be under, but it's not way under. But we're talking about 4 less wins than they had previously. Also, free Mike Davis.
Cincinnati Bengals, a line of 6 wins.
I think the Bengals are the worst team in the NFL.
That's a take. So you're making this a lock then?
Yeah, I'll make this a lock. It's an under.
I went over on this one.
For the Bengals?
I did.
What about this Bengals team and season makes you think that they're going to win 7 games? It was 6.5?
6.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, they would have to win 7 to hit the over, but
yes.
I don't think they're necessarily going to win 5. I mean, they were a 6-win team last year, had a high number of injuries, 6.9 win projection from Football Outsiders.
They already have a high number of injuries this year.
It's not true. All right, Cleveland Browns, a line of 9 wins, impossibly high for a Cleveland 2.0 team, having won 7 last year with 1 tie.
I'm going over.
Wow.
Love the Browns. I'm just on the Browns hype train.
Yeah, I'm going under.
Really? I get that should not surprise me.
I like the Browns offense. I have some questions at defense.
What does Football Outsiders have to say about them?
A projection of 8.0 wins.
Oh, okay.
So, Dallas Cowboys, a line of 9 wins.
I have no feel for the Cowboys whatsoever. I guess I'm going to say over. I feel like the Cowboys kind of tend to find themselves at 10 wins every single year. It's not the hardest place to get in what might be a weaker NFC East with both Washington and the New York Giants, either starting rookie quarterbacks or aged quarterbacks. I think that the Cowboys can sort of back their way into 10 wins.
I went with a slight under here. Not, you know, could go either way on that one. Denver, a line of 7 wins.
It's another really hard one.
That's how they're designed. Also, they're really all really hard if you only get 13 out of 32, right?
I am going to go over for the Denver Broncos.
I went with an under here.
Wow, we are really... I like that word.
It is good.
Disagreeing about a lot of these.
The Detroit Lions, a line of 6.5 wins.
This is an under.
I not only went with an over, I decided to make this a lock.
A lock?
Yeah.
Of the Lions over 6.5 wins?
Yeah, they only won 6 last year, but had the point differential of a 7-win team.
Negative 36 is the win differential of a 7-win team?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like 2 points a game, basically.
So then the Panthers underperformed at that negative 6-point differential. That's 7-9.
Yes.
That's basically a 500-point differential.
Yes.
You love the Lions. So this was one of our hot button questions.
I think they're going to win it for Jermaine Curse.
Yep. They've recently met him. but he's basically the Gipper with regards to the Lions.
There for a couple weeks of practice before the first game.
You know, at OTAs, they had some great hangs.
It's tough to see a teammate carted off like that.
It happens to almost every team.
Well, not every
this
team has
NFL.
An injury that severe.
Okay, so when we were talking to Mike Sando about his quarterback tiers, Matt Stafford was one where I said he was way overvalued, and you said he was appropriately valued. So I think a lower tier 2 quarterback.
That sounds right.
Give us the argument for Matt Stafford.
I mean, before last year, his performance had been a lot better, and then he was horrible last year. That's the argument for Matt Stafford. I mean, I can look up the specific ranks he had in QBR again, if that's helpful.
I think we're going to need to do that.
It's like when you say, like, I can show you the receipt if I need to. I think you're going to need to, sir. last year, Stafford was 22nd in QBR, just ahead of Nick Mullins. In 2017, a lot of Nick Mullins talk on this pod. In 2017, he finished 7th In 2016, he finished 8th.
So basically,
both of the years, those years, he was
your
ahead
argument
of
here,
Russell
for,
Wilson.
And you made this a lock.
Yeah.
Wow. For the Lions,
I think it might be the biggest difference between the teams, like Football Outsiders' projection and their line.
And they're projecting. What is Football Outsiders projecting?
8.3 wins.
So basically what you're arguing here with this pick is you're making an argument for Matt Stafford regression to the mean. Last year was an outlier.
Yeah. Speaking of quarterback regression to the mean, the Green Bay Packers have a line of 9 wins. Heavy action on the over here.
Heavy action on the over?
Yeah, of course.
By whom?
People love the Packers.
Oh my.
Matt LaFleur.
This is an under.
That is also an under. I mean, I don't think it's actually crazy. Football Outsiders has them with an 8.6 projection, but it's a slight under for me. Houston.
But basically what we're saying, Aaron Rodgers played 15 games last year, right?
Did he? I mean, he was hampered, though.
Oh, yeah, he was hampered.
I mean, he couldn't run the first few weeks of the season.
It does. And scrambling quarterback, Aaron, he actually is deceptively good.
Yeah, what are you talking about?
But the Packers, with Aaron Rodgers as their starting quarterback, were 6-9-1 last year. So this win projection was 9, right?
Yes.
That means you think they're going to win 4 more games. Basically, what you're saying to me is the difference between Mike McCarthy and Matt LaFleur is 4 wins.
I don't know if they're necessarily saying that.
I mean, I guess you're saying that there was some luck, and you're saying that Aaron Rodgers is going to get better as a... He's not young.
And they won... I mean, they had a tie in there. They won 6.5. They also, their point differential was out of a 7.4 win team. I mean, it's not
still, you're talking about 3 more wins than even their point differential. Like, I just don't see that the difference between these coaches is that great. And I really, I mean, there's some argument for maybe they just had a bad season. But, I'm just going to go back and look at the Green Bay records from previous years. The coaches don't matter that much. Matt LaFleur does not matter that much.
I mean, it's hard to say beforehand, but I don't know that I would count on it mattering.
Wow, looking back at it at the same time. So we have a 6-9-1 in 2018, a 7-9 in 2017, and then before that, 10-6, 10-6, 12-1. I mean, most of Aaron Rodgers' career, they've been over 10 wins.
Yeah.
At the same time, it's still been 2 consecutive years, and Aaron Rodgers is not getting younger.
Okay. Next up here, we have the Houston Texans at a line of 8.5 wins.
And another really fascinating team after this last week.
Yeah.
The argument that the Texans have no idea what they're doing could be made. At the same time, did the Texans make themselves significantly worse on the field this last week?
Well, especially, I mean, it depends whether you were counting Jadeveon Clowney as definitely part of the team. I mean, they got... He wasn't playing before, and now they have guys who are playing. So, a team that won 11 games last season with a 10.2-point differential, but still has an 8-win projection by Football Outsiders.
I have another team in this division that I like. At the same time, it's still a pretty weak division.
Right.
And they won 11 games. This has to be an over.
I also went over. The Indianapolis Colts with a line of 7.5 wins after Andrew Luck's injury.
This is an under for me.
That's going to be an under for me, too. I mean, I think the Jacoby Brissett hype has gotten a little out of hand here. Like, look, you know, for a backup quarterback, for someone to step in this position, especially since he's been practicing all training camp, well qualified to do so. Also, what was their record the last time Jacoby Brissett started all season? Like 4-12? I know it's a better all-around team than that, but yeah.
Is it that much better of an all-around team, though?
I don't know. I'm unconvinced as well.
This is a 6-10 team at best.
At best? I mean, clearly people think so. They were 4-12, indeed.
They were 4-12 the last time Jacoby Brissett started.
Yes.
So you're going to tell me that they drafted one good linebacker last year and one good offensive lineman, and all of a sudden this team is significantly better?
Jacksonville Jaguars, a line of 8 wins.
Oh, God, that's pretty high.
It is pretty high.
Oh, I'm still going over.
Wow. Football Outsiders Not Fans has them at a 7.3 wins projection.
They're 0.7 lower? That's not that...
That's still a lot. Like, usually, you know, they're like only a couple 0.2 off or something.
Are you actually going under here?
I am going under. The other place where they're way off, Kansas City Chiefs.
Wait, so I want to say about the Jaguars. I do think, you know, we talked about defense.
By the way, Nick Foles sucks. Like, you know, the regular season games count too.
Nick Foles does not suck when compared to Blake Bortles.
No, he doesn't suck when compared to Blake Bortles. But like,
and
the idea
defense
that,
is going to play better than they did. Like, Josh Allen is a fucking beast.
The idea,
did you see him in preseason?
No,
he is
I did not.
Game-changing defensive player.
The idea that the Nick Foles that people saw in the Eagles' run to the Super Bowl victory over New England is like who he is as a player, like, no, he's not that. He can't sustain that over a 16-game season, and that's why he was terrible
quarterback
at the start of last year during the regular season.
He's not terrible.
He was.
Is he a 9-win quarterback with a very good defense?
He can be.
I mean, you started with a defense that was already pretty good and are adding, like, I think people overvalue the importance of rookies when having these conversations. I think that Josh Allen, if anybody in this draft has the chance of being a game-changing defensive player, Josh Allen has that chance.
Okay. Wow, Nick Foles, they were 4-1 with him starting last year. He was really good at the end of the year when he played, wasn't he?
Why do you keep doing this to yourself? Somehow you're going to crush me in these over-unders.
Yeah.
They were 4.
I guess he did. He did have 334 yards in week two. Now, it was against Tampa. So you've got to apply the adjustment
for that. It's like a 180 against a normal team.
In week one, he was 19 of 34 for 117 yards against the Atlanta defense.
Oof. That's week one.
Somehow they won that game.
Week one is always an outlier week.
Okay.
You got to throw week one and week 17 out when judging a player. He was 4-1 as the starter of the Eagles last year. That's what I'm trying to say.
Kansas City Chiefs, a line of 10.5 wins.
I'm going over.
I wanted to go over because Andy Reid is just so good in the regular season, but man, Football Outsiders is very down on this team. 9.3 win projection. So
what is it about the Chiefs that has Football Outsiders down?
Well, they also were a little lucky to win 12 games last year. Their point differential was typical of a 10.7 win team, like more of an 11 win team. So then you add just kind of some regression to the mean and all that, and you know that drops them under.
I believe less in the Chiefs regression than
I mean, Andy Reid's done it before.
I mean, like the...
You're picking a lot of overs.
Pat Mahomes, like people are talking about him in fantasy, right? He's probably not going to replicate the season he had, but he might still be just as effective.
He might not have the same quarterback in the NFL.
Fantasy season that he had, right? He might not throw for as many touchdowns because whether touchdowns are thrown or run for is a little random, and they ended up throwing for a lot of touchdowns last year. They could end up just running for some of those or whatever.
Okay.
But this is going to be a very good offense.
LA Chargers line of 10 wins.
Okay, so my question for you is, we had news come out yesterday that the Chargers are prepared to basically let Melvin Gordon sit out the year, go forward with Austin Ekeler and Justin Jackson as their running backs. Does this change your perspective about the Chargers at all?
Maybe a tiny little bit. I mean, I think if there was going to be a running back who was not interchangeable, Melvin Gordon would be the example of it as someone who's a really effective receiver.
Haven't we seen Ekeler be extremely effective also, though?
True.
And so do you think that that's like we're looking at that just because of the merit of the individual players, or is it just this system?
In terms of how effective they are?
Yes.
I mean, it certainly could be. I don't know.
To me, it changes nothing at all.
I think, you know, Ben Baldwin had this tweet on earlier Monday about, you know, that the thing is, even if you think that running backs matter, Ezekiel Elliott, like, hasn't actually demonstrated that he's that good above and beyond his offensive line. I do think when you look at kind of those context-independent stats that they generally show, Melvin Gordon is an elite player.
DVOA-wise was number five last year, number three DVOA, number five DR last year. So, had a very good season. Let me see Austin Ekeler.
But I would say that my going under here is much less about the running back situation and much more about Derwin James's injury.
And I'm definitely going under here also, though. I mean, the injuries racking up for this team, it just feels
also
like...
Also, Okung missing the first 6 weeks, it sounds like, with the
it
blood
feels
clot.
Like they're due. Austin Ekeler was the seventh best receiver as a running back also.
Okay.
And as a runner, still pretty good. So, I mean, Melvin Gordon was fifth. Austin Ekeler was 15th. Or Melvin Gordon was third. Austin Ekeler was 15th. Like, the drop-off there is not great. So, basically, my thinking is it's not a coincidence. If Melvin Gordon does sit out this year, which it feels like we're trending toward, right?
I don't know. I mean, he could also be a negotiating position.
it feels like we're trending more toward this than we are with somebody like Ezekiel Elliott, right?
Yes.
So if that were to happen, the fact that the players who've sat out full seasons as quote-unquote star players in the last few years are both running backs is not a coincidence to me.
No, of course not.
And I think that we're going to continue seeing this fight happen over and over and over again, where we see...
I'd have it with Chris Carson in a couple of years here.
Sayonara.
that's not how the Seahawks are going to approach it.
But the Seahawks might approach it that way. Because
they have Rashad Penny.
Yeah, they spent a first-round pick on Rashad Penny. But I think basically what we're going to see is running backs who are very good running backs still not being valued by their teams, or very good statistical running backs not being valued by their teams as much as they would like to be.
Yeah. I mean, change is always hard for the people who are dealing with it. The LA Rams have a line of 10 wins.
I'm going over.
I am also going over here. This is another team that outperformed their point differential pretty significantly last year. Had an 11-win, basically, point differential. Actually won 13 games.
My God, the point differential has to be pretty damn good.
Yeah. Miami Dolphins.
Wait, but first on the Rams. I mean, they had the best point differential in the league, right? No, third best after the Saints and the Chiefs. I think that they are due for some aggression in a couple of different places. I also think this is the year the Rams, they either need to, things are going to start getting a lot harder for the Rams after this year. And every year that passes, their cap situation is going to get worse. But at the same time, I think that they're going to get to 11 wins or so. The schedule, I was looking through the schedule while we were talking with Mina, it's not an easy schedule necessarily. There are a lot of ways that they could probably start out this season, like 1-2, 1-3. The Rams, at the same time, I believe so much in Sean McVay, and they have players like Aaron Donald who are just too frightening.
The Miami Dolphins with a line of 4.5 wins, the lowest. Naturally, in the NFL this season, the fish tank in full effect after they traded away Laramie Tunsil and Kenny Stills on the eve of the season.
I'm going under.
I am also going under here. Going against the numbers, because when a team wants to have the number one pick this badly, they're probably going to find a way to do it. The Minnesota Vikings, a line of 9 wins.
I'm going over for the Vikings.
I am going under for the Vikings.
Really?
Yeah, Football Outsiders, not fans here. 8-win projection.
Who is Football Outsiders a fan of?
Not many teams.
All right. Some teams are going to have to win games, Football Outsiders.
I mean, it adds up to 256. I did the math.
This Vikings team is due for regression. People went into last year thinking that they were potential Super Bowl favorites in the NFC, and they sort of...
You know, they've talked about wanting to run the ball more, right?
I know. Still.
I mean, I guess it did work. The Seahawks won more games last year, so maybe more power to you.
Can they get to 9? They're getting to 9. Give me Adam Thielen in every fantasy league.
Know that if you're drafting with Tristan in the last Pelton Cast fantasy league on Tuesday night. New England Patriots, a line of 11.5 wins.
I'm going under.
I'm also going under, despite the fact that their schedule is atrociously easy.
Oh, God, I hate the Patriots.
I mean, their point they won 11 games. They had a slightly worse than 11-point differential last year. Heavy action on the under. I'm surprised by that. I would have expected people to like the over there.
So here's my argument. I told you I was going to make my argument against the Patriots. And my argument that the Patriots might not have a great season. The argument that they're going to is because they play probably the easiest division every single fucking year. And it's so obnoxious. I mean, they basically have 6 wins right there. Well, 5. Yeah, 6 wins right there.
You were going to say if they have to go to Miami, but not anymore.
I think at Buffalo is a bit of a tough game. they have 6 wins sitting for them in the AFC East, right? So they don't need to pick up that many more outside of it. However, the reason that I think that the Patriots are going to do worse than the expectations are, people are way too confident about this Patriots team. For the first time in like the last 8 years, I don't hear anybody predicting the demise of the Patriots. It's almost like nobody, even you listen to Bill Simmons, right? All of last year, he's like, the Patriots are bad, the Patriots are bad, the Patriots are bad, but they're still going to win the Super Bowl. And he was right about that. At the same time, this year, he's just like, the Patriots are great. Everything is great. There's no way that you go into the season with a 42-year-old quarterback and you can approach that situation as everything is great.
Well, speaking of going into the playoffs, the season with an aging quarterback, the New Orleans Saints with a line of 10 wins after winning 13 last season.
I'm going under.
I am going to slide over on this one. They have the highest Football Outsiders projection of anyone at 10.3 wins. The New York Giants, a line of 5.5 wins.
I'm going over.
Yeah, against my better instincts, I'm going over. I told you earlier that I think the under was a lock for you last year, it appears, based on this. I told you earlier that I needed to recheck this one because I didn't remember what I had picked. But 5.5 is just so low.
I mean, they won 5 games last year, and they were bad.
Yeah.
You can get to 6 wins.
The New York Jets with a line of 7.5 wins.
7.5?
Yeah.
Good God. How many games do they play against the AFC East?
6.
I think the Jets are going to be better, but I do not think they're going to be 8 wins better. That's an under for me.
Wait, you don't think they're going to be 8 wins? Okay. They actually, Football Outsiders has them as a slight over, so I'm taking them as an over. Oakland Raiders, a line of 6 wins coming off their thrilling Hard Knocks appearance, which wraps up on Tuesday. Oh, some real pain facial expressions here that don't translate on podcast.
I'm going over for the Raiders.
I also ended up going over for the Raiders. I got to tell you, so I picked up the Denver defense to play against them in week one in a fantasy league where I had the Jags and the Jags
just
are hosting.
Just watch yourself for Josh Jacobs.
I'm just very concerned about it. I can already hear like the Monday Night Football broadcast, and it's going to be talking about, oh, this Antonio Brown connection. Everyone was so worried about it throughout training camp, but here he is with 150 receiving yards and 2 touchdowns.
Do you remember Kareem Hunt in his rookie year against the Patriots?
I do.
There's your Josh Jacobs. Okay. First game, Monday Night Football against the Broncos.
He's going to fumble in his first touch as well?
Yep, and then gain like 200 yards.
Philadelphia Eagles, a line of 10 wins. Trendy pick in the NFC this year.
I'm going under.
I am also going under. The hype is a little out of hand here, especially like Carson Wentz. Can we see him like really play quite well for and stay healthy for an entire season?
I mean, what are the additions here for the Eagles? They lose Michael Bennett, which is a pretty big loss. Also, the fucking Patriots. God, we just knew he was going to end up with the Patriots. But we have Michael Bennett being lost. We have Nick Foles being lost. If something does happen to Carson Wentz after him, it's not great. They added Jordan Howard in the backfield, which
Deshaun
is subtraction.
Jackson.
They added Deshaun Jackson.
The Pittsburgh Steelers with a line of 10.5 wins.
10.5 wins?
Oh, no, wait, I'm looking at last year's.
I was going to say, that cannot be that high.
I'm sorry, that line is 9.
I'm going over for the Steelers.
I am also going over for the Steelers. A team that won 9.5 last year when you got the tie and had a similar point differential.
And this is going to be the type of team that I think I told you I think Juju Smith-Schuster is going to lead the NFL in receiving yards. They're going to be proof that having star players, especially on offense, when they're not the quarterback, is not that big of a deal.
San Francisco 49ers with a line of 8 wins after winning 4 last season.
They're going to win 4 more games this year? Is Nick Mullins starting every game? I'm going under.
They had a 5.8 point differential, much better than that. I mean, it's not unreasonable. There was some reasonable hype here, but let's see how Jimmy G looks first before going in under or before going anything.
You have to
under.
Make the choice now. You don't get to wait. Also, we did see how Jimmy G looked in the preseason.
Well, yes. The Seattle Seahawks, a line of 8.5 wins. We talked about this earlier with Mina.
It's an over.
It's a comfortable over now.
Comfortable over. There
I mean,
we
not
go.
A comfortable over, but it's like not. It's like a deliberation anymore. Tampa Bay.
We're way too confident.
I mean, I think they're going to be 9-7. You know, I'm not that confident. Tampa Bay, a line of 6.5 wins.
I'm going over for Tampa Bay.
I am going under.
Really?
Yeah, you're excited about Bruce Arians.
Hell yeah, I'm excited about Bruce Arians.
I mean, you should be. They did have a 6.5 win point differential last year.
Yeah, 6.5 win point differential. They were a team that should have won more than they did, and they're adding one of the better coaches in the league.
Yeah, the defense could be really bad, though.
Whatever. Bruce Arians has dealt with it. They're going to score 60 a game.
Tennessee Titans, a line of 7.5 wins.
God, I just am so sick of this team. I'm going under.
I'm going over. This, to me, seems like an 8-8 team.
I'm changing that to an over. Yeah. They'll get to 8-8. Come on.
That's your 18th over so far out of 31. The Washington professional football team, a line of 5.5 wins. Having won 7 last year, albeit with a 5.7 point differential.
I'm still going over. It's so low.
That's very low. So you ended up with 19 overs. I ended up balancing that out at 16 and 16, since I planned this out of time.
That was it?
That's it. That's all 32 teams.
So wait, what? We only made one lock each.
Oh, I did. Yes, we only went one lock each this year.
So my lock was the Bengals.
The Bengals under, yes.
And your lock?
The Lions over. Last year, my locks were Jacksonville under and San Francisco under. Pretty good there. Your locks were the Giants under and the Raiders under. Pretty good there as well.
I think we got all of our locks last
year. And Ben Baldwin also took the Giants and Raiders under his locks. So we were 6 for 6 on locks.
I would say that I don't think there are as many obvious, the Bears being one of them, but I think Vegas really responded to that. There are not as many obvious regression teams this year.
I think the market is getting a little wiser here.
Well,
which makes it harder for us.
But they also won so many games last year. It wasn't just that they were slightly better. They got all the way to 12-4. So even with Vegas having them win 3 less games, it still feels like a bit high.
Oh, so you're gonna make this a lock?
No, I'm not making it a lock. I'm just saying that because they could easily get to 10 wins. Like, they don't have to win that many games to get to the over.
I mean, they have to win 10 of them.
Yeah, but winning 10 games is not that hard if you're a pretty good team. It does feel like we might see a lot of parity throughout the league. When I look at the divisions, I don't, in the NFC, I just don't know if I see obvious division winners anywhere. You know, it's like the only obvious division winner is like the Patriots are going to win that division, right? I think the Patriots and maybe the Chiefs are the only two where I'm like, those are teams that I would almost guarantee that they're going to win their divisions.
I think that's a fairly typical number.
2?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, anything else?
Well, so we'll see you again for our regularly scheduled PeltonCast this week, and then we'll also see everybody in Seattle on Friday at PeltonCast Live at Belltown Yacht Club. Wear your best nautical attire.
It's not a yacht club, for the record. But do wear your nautical attire. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.